Finally, a budget motel chain is up for grabs, as we hear from correspondent Matt Piper.
Motel 6 will be under new management soon. Parent company Blackstone has agreed to sell the hotel chain to India-based Oyo in a deal worth $525 million. The agreement includes the company's Studio 6 locations and is expected to be wrapped by the end of the year. There are more than 1,400 Motel 6 locations across the U.S. and Canada.
And we'll leave the light on for you.
That was a great ad campaign. I think the towels and sheets left a little bit to desire.
Oh, well.
A little thin on the sheets and a little coarse on the towels. thanks, John Silva. Appreciate it as always. We have obviously sports coming up in about 8 minutes, and we have Senator Richard Blumenthal coming up for you at 7:20 this morning. Right now, though, we'll transfer over to Mark Christopher in the Brown, Pandeiras, and Scott Traffic Center. See how that Monday morning is starting. Good start or a bad start or a mid start?
We're off to a pretty good start, Shaq.
And now sports with Brian Shackman from the Cordell and Cordell Sports Desk.
We'll start you off with the NFL. The defending champ Kansas City Chiefs are now 3-0. Big 22-17 win in Atlanta. The KC defense stomped Atlanta twice on fourth downs in the fourth quarter. Patrick Mahomes had two touchdown passes and an interception. If you didn't get enough football fix over the weekend, well, you got two Monday night games. You have the Jaguars and the Bills, 7:30 on ESPN, and Washington and Cincinnati, 8:15 on ABC. The New York Giants get a win, much, much needed, in Cleveland. 21 first-half points and 0 second-half points, enough to win 21-15. Across the league, Green Bay over Tennessee, 30-14. Connecticut native Will Levis, two touchdowns and two interceptions. One of those interceptions, unfortunately, a pick six. Colts beat the Bears. Vikings, they are the real deal. Remember Sam Darnold? Everyone thought he was a bust. Well, they beat Houston 34-7, and Darnold had four touchdown passes. Got a little injured, though. We're not sure what his status is moving forward. Philly over New Orleans in New Orleans with a big fourth quarter comeback. The Chargers, Justin Herbert gets hurt late. Steelers come on late and win that one. Broncos beat Tampa in Tampa. Andy Dalton replaced Bryce Young in Carolina, and they look great. He threw for three scores. They beat the Raiders in Vegas. Seattle now 3-0 over Miami. Miami's reeling. Tua Tagovailoa out at least a month, and now Skylar Thompson, their backup, he left the game with a chest injury, so they're on to quarterback number three. Dallas, man, they lose twice in a row at home, this time to Baltimore. They almost came back from a 28-6 deficit, but they lose 28-25. The Rams come back and stun San Francisco late 27-24, and the Lions beat the Cardinals. Baseball, the Red Sox beat Minnesota 8-1 on the back of Tristan Casas, 3 home runs, 7 RBI. The Yankees, they beat Oakland 7-4, their magic number. They beat Baltimore once in their upcoming season, and they'll clinch the American League East. Home runs from Aaron Judge, number 55, Gleyber Torres, and Jason Dominguez. The Mets went 2-1 over the Phillies. They are still in the second and third wild card spot tied with Arizona. WNBA playoffs. Caitlin Clark, Indiana Fever in Connecticut, facing the Connecticut Sun, and Connecticut looked awesome, especially in the fourth quarter where they shut the door with a 25-12 quarter. They win 93-69. They'll do it again on Wednesday. As for Clark, she went 2-for-13 from three-point land and only had 11 points. The rest of the WNBA playoffs, Breonna Stewart, 20 points and 11 rebounds, top seed New York over Atlanta. Minnesota beat Phoenix, and again, lots of UConn all over the place. Obviously, Diana Taurasi on Phoenix, but UConn alum Nafisa Collier from Minnesota, 38 points. Defending champ Las Vegas beat Seattle. And, of course, you know, the Hartford Athletic over the weekend, by the way, they won again. They haven't lost a game since August the 10th. They're on the road next week, but they're back home on October 5th. It's a fun thing to watch, even when they're not winning. But right now, they're smoking hot. And UConn football, might be time to pay a little attention there. Now 2-2 Saturday night. They won 48-14 over Florida Atlantic with 421 rushing yards. They have a bunch of home games in a row this weekend coming up. They host Buffalo. And that's your morning sports. Let's go over to Mark Christopher in the Brown, Pandeiras, and Scott Traffic Center. Hey, Mark. A lot going on in our world. I mean, so many things going on from overseas, Middle East, and stuff going on here in the States. We've got the election coming up. It's always good to catch up with Senator Richard Blumenthal here on Brian and Company. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me, Brian.
I have. I'm gonna make it visitor the guest choice this morning. We could do Safe Bet Act. We could do even an update with the Online Safety Act. We could do the investigations into the assassination attempts on the former president. We could do spending bills. What do you want to talk about first?
Well, let me give you a quick update on the Kids Online Safety Act, which is that it passed the Senate 91 to 3, overwhelming bipartisan majority. This is a measure, as you know, to provide tools to parents as well as young people take back their online lives and disconnect from the algorithms that are driving content at them and hold the social media companies to a duty of care so they have some accountability. And we're now hopeful about the House of Representatives has to pass both houses, obviously. The main committee, Energy and Commerce, passed it by a voice vote just a few days ago. So I'm very hopeful that by the end of the year, Kids Online Safety Act will pass the Congress and go to the president's desk.
Does it have enough flexibility to, because we don't know what technology is going to change and adapt to. Does it have the ability to change with the times, or is this something that's going to have to be updated over the years?
It has tremendous flexibility, and that point is a very, very important one, because obviously technology is changing so rapidly with artificial intelligence. But the duty of care is essentially that the social media companies themselves have a burden to stop driving toxic content about bullying, eating disorders, self-harm, and other content that they know is harming young people. So it's a flexible duty of care that can be adapted by the companies and the courts. And most important, those tools that parents need and kids themselves want can be adapted with new technology. You know, I had a forum at one of the elementary schools in New Haven just Friday with the governor. And what struck me is how articulate and forceful young people are themselves in saying, you know, this social media thing is causing us to suffer. We can't stop it. It's almost addictive. It takes us away from our classes, from social interaction in person with other young people, just very insightful about their own desire to kind of cut the addictive connection to social media. So I think it's flexible and it can be adapted.
I have these conversations with my nieces. You know, they're starting to peel back the phones in the schools, and they're like, well, what about if they have change in my schedule and my coach needs to meet with me? Well, we used to do bulletin boards and find someone in the hallway, you know, figure it out. I mean, it's I love the fact that we kind of have this desire to roll back a little bit, you know, especially in our hallways and our classrooms. You know, the Safe Bet Act, I was going to just ask you to explain it to people who don't know about it, but I want to lead you to the question that I'm concerned about. And, the focus is on sports betting. And the one thing I want to say is that sports betting is based on events, and the events have, you know, beginning and end points. It's the casino stuff that I think is the most dangerous, actually, because you can play 24/7, 7 days a week. You know, talk about this piece of legislation and if it addresses stuff like the stuff that I just spoke my concerns about.
Essentially, it does, although it pertains primarily to sports betting, and it's called the Safe Bet Act. It essentially would forbid the gambling industry from targeting people who have problems. You know, it's really that simple. Right now, they do enticements, ads, promotions that are devised individually. They are framed for individuals, which they can do because of artificial intelligence and because they can monitor what you are doing minute by minute, whether you're winning or losing. Obviously, they target the losers. That's where the money is. And they are less interested in people who are winning and taking money from them. So the Safe Bet Act essentially forbids that kind of targeting through the use of artificial intelligence. And also forces standards on affordability. In other words, fewer than 5 deposits over a 24-hour period. People are in over their heads, and all of us probably know someone who became addicted to gambling. It is addictive, and the debts can force people to, literally ruin lives, marriages, families, and also potentially even lead to suicide.
Yeah, you know, I'm projecting my own views, but I encourage you to think about it in a more expansive way, because I think the casino stuff is equally, if not more, dangerous. We're talking with Senator Richard Blumenthal here on Brian and Company. You know, the spending bill stuff, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I thought that, you know, you make a budget and then you go through the year and you spend your money and then you make another budget. I mean, this stuff is starting to, you know, it's so annoying that so much. I mean, at least, you know, people can criticize you, Senator, but you're putting forth legislation that's trying to move things forward, whereas the spending bills, it's just running in place. You know, we're going to maybe extend it till December 20th. So we're going to have a fight over this before the, you know, right around the holidays. Why are we going to ever return to the normal way to sort of budget and go through this process?
I think we can. You know, I'm on the Armed Services Committee, and every year we do the military budget. It's bipartisan. The vote out of committee is always almost unanimous. I have amendments. I'm trying to move submarine production forward, the F-35s, the helicopters. We all have individual interests and causes. Overall, the NDAA, National Defense Authorization Act, is approved before the end of the year almost routinely. So there's no reason we can't do that with the budget as a whole if we have the will to do it. And I am hoping, Brian, that once this election is over and maybe the kind of partisan fever is broken, that we can come together. I spend every day trying to do bipartisan things. This Kids Online Safety Act is bipartisan. 91-3 it was approved. I am doing it with Marsha Blackburn, Republican of Tennessee. We may disagree about a lot of things, but we'll agree about getting that measure passed and also the budget and returning to the regular order.
Senator Richard Blumenthal here on Brian and Company. I don't really know how to approach the Israel question. You know, it's like you got 2 minutes. How do I, you know, they haven't been able to solve this in, you know, millennia. So, but it's getting worse, and it's, you know, Israel's in a tough spot, and there's obviously, you know, humanitarian elements and civilian casualties. And I mean, I think it's a little more linear actually to the north than it is in Gaza. But I mean, what's your view on this right now, and how can we get to some sort of movement toward peace?
I continue to hope, even though it may seem somewhat in vain at this point, that the two sides in Gaza can come together on some temporary agreement that will permit return of the hostages and more humanitarian relief and a ceasefire, at least temporarily, that will lead to a longer path to peace, including in the north, because Hezbollah says it will cease its conflict if there is a ceasefire in Gaza. So I think the key is Gaza, temporary at least, ceasefire. But Israel has a right to defend itself. It's still under attack from a terrorist organization that has a single mission, one goal, annihilation of Israel and the Jewish people. And so it has to be secure. But at the same time, there needs to be a path to a larger normalizing of relations, which is possible. I visited Saudi Arabia as well as Israel, Jordan, and other countries in the Middle East. And there is a hunger to normalize relations so that there can be peace and stability leading to economic progress, which is the long-range goal.
Right, but Riyadh says two-state solution before we do that. I mean, that's not even close. I mean, we're not even close to that. I mean,
And I have pressed Netanyahu face-to-face when I've met with him on the two-state solution, as well as on the ceasefire. I have been there in bipartisan groups with Lindsey Graham and others on the Republican side and Democrats like Ben Cardin, all of us agreeing that a two-state solution is necessary for relations to be normalized, some kind of self-determination for the Palestinians, but it has to be in a way that's not militarized, does not provide a solution that could lead to another October 7th. You know, the Israelis rightly feel their security is very much in danger right now. Think of it in terms of our having a neighbor on our border like the Hamas, and the war is not against the Palestinians, it's against Hamas, a terrorist organization.
Yeah. Senator, I know you're up really early anyway, but it's not too early for you. But we appreciate the time. We know you're busy, and we look forward to doing it again soon.
Thank you very much for having me. Always delighted to be with you.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. Senator Richard Blumenthal joining us here on Brian and Company.
President Biden was away from the White House on Friday, so President Jed Bartlett stepped in. Martin Sheen was at a White House event Friday to mark the 25th anniversary of The West Wing. He was joined by co-stars Dulé Hill, Janelle Maloney, and Richard Schiff, as well as show creator Aaron Sorkin. They came at the invitation of the First Lady, but it was a bipartisan event with Republicans Michael McCaul and Joe Walsh attending. Waiters passed out bourbon and ginger ale cocktails called the Jackal in tribute to the show's press secretary, Claudia Jean Craig, better known as CJ.
I never watched the show. Is it that good?
It was great. I enjoyed it.
I knew some people who watched it straight through twice.
Yeah, I watched it again on Max.
I probably should. I need to watch more television. I know I do. I still. I mean,
that's
like
a strange comment.
No, but it's true. I the joke I have is I'm still on season two of The Wire. You know what I mean? Like, I just don't. And I've been watching The Bear. But
have you gotten around to MASH yet?
No, I used to watch MASH with my father, and I watched a lot of reruns. So I you know, Grape Knee High, and I've watched tons of MASH. Back in the day, but it's been a long time. But I definitely and I saw some of the images from their visit. Martin Sheen looks pretty good. He's all gray now, but yeah. he looks good.
You could tell he enjoyed hamming it up when he was president.
Yeah, what a role though! What an amazing thing to get to do. Thanks, John.
And now sports with Brian Shackman from the Cordell and Cordell Sports Desk.
All right, Sunday Night Football, Kansas City. In Atlanta. Now, you think Atlanta may be a stinky franchise, but they're so talented this year, and it was a really fun game to watch. Patrick Mahomes had two touchdown passes and an interception, but really what won for Kansas City was the defense.
Long count. They give it off. Bashaun Robinson hit in the backfield. He goes down. Kansas City holds on downs again. Nick Bolton scrapes to the outside and makes the hit. And Kansas City defensively holds on downs. Fourth down at the 6 and now the 13. And preserves a 22-17 lead at 51 seconds to go in the game.
Could argue if they kick field goals in both spots, right? I mean, that would have been 6 points, but they lose 22-17. Again, the defending champs are 3-0 now. Monday Night Football tonight, you have Bills Jaguars 7:30 on ESPN, but you have a second game, Washington Cincinnati 8:15 on ABC. Obviously, the Patriots and the Jets played on Thursday. The Giants, really tough start, but they go into Cleveland and they are off to a good start.
Jones on third down, looking end zone, throws, it's Neighbors. Touchdown!
Yeah, they had two touchdowns, Daniel Jones to Malik Neighbors in the first half, one running touchdown. They had 21 points in the first half, zero in the second, but it was enough to win 21-15. Whipping around the league, Green Bay over Tennessee, 30-14. Will Levis from Connecticut for Tennessee, two touchdowns, but also two interceptions, including a pick six. Colts over the Bears. Vikings, they're really good, 34-7 over Houston. Sam Darnold, four touchdown passes. Steelers beat the Chargers. Justin Herbert hurt that high ankle sprain again. He did not finish the game. Broncos beat Tampa. Andy Dalton replacing Bryce Young in Carolina threw three touchdown passes in beating the Raiders. Seattle, they're now 3-0 with a win over Miami. Miami's backup quarterback, Skylar Thompson, was out with a chest injury, so they're under quarterback number three. Baltimore beats Dallas in Dallas 28-25, and the Rams beat San Francisco late 27-24, and the Lions beat the Cardinals. Now baseball, the Red Sox, I mean, listen, they're playing for stats, and they're playing for contracts, and Tristan Casas, when he's healthy, he can hit.
He hit one in the left field. Monson sees he hits this one high and deep. Back toward the triangle. Long run for Buxton, and it's gone. Into the bullpen. Three home runs and three at-bats for Casas, and we're only in the fifth inning. Can you believe it? Wow. Against the wind, a tremendous shot high and deep out where the pitchers stand in the Red Sox pen. And it's 8-1 Red Sox. What a show for Tristan Casas. The first three home run game of his career.
Three home runs, seven RBI. They beat Minnesota 8-1. The Yankees, they beat Oakland 7-4. And thanks in part to Aaron Judge.
Infield's back, payoff pitch. Swing and a high fly ball deep into center field. Bleday's moving back, still back on the warning track in front of the wall. He leaps, and it's gone! A deep home run into straightaway center field, just underneath the Holy Toledo sign here at the Coliseum.
Number 55 for Judge, Gleyber Torres and Chase Dominguez also went deep. Again, they win at 7-4. They come home to face Baltimore. They win one game in that series. They clinch the AL East. The Mets beat Philly 2-1. They're still very much in the hunt for that wild card spot in the National League. The White Sox, they lose. They lost their 120th game, ties the modern record with the 1962 Mets, 120 losses, and they have six games left. The Reds fired their manager, David Bell, with five games left, and Shohei Ohtani hit home run number 53, and he has 55 steals. The Indiana Fever lose to the Connecticut Sun in the first playoff game. It was not close. They slammed the door. 93-69 was the final. Caitlin Clark, only 11 points. And that's your morning sports. Let's go over to Mark Christopher in the Brown Pandeiras and Scott Traffic Center.
And if the Red Sox had only hit in September.
I mean, listen, if they had Story and Casas all season, it might have been different.
Yeah, but you're right.
You know, I mean, who knows? I mean, they're both legit major league hitters. So, but at the same time, I mean, I don't know.
I mean, Kansas City's in Minnesota not playing with. Even Detroit is past Minnesota now. That's how bad Minnesota's been lately. Yep. So, yeah, unfortunately, the Sox did not hit in September.
Broadcasting from the Johnson Brunetti Studios, this is Brian and Company on WTIC News Talk 1080.
It's really my last window of the morning to get a few nuggets in for you, and there's a bunch of things I want to talk about. I talked earlier about this stunning statistic from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics about men of prime working age. We're talking 25 to 54. By the way, I'm only a year out from being out of that window, which is nuts. The percentage of men in that age group who are not only not working but are not looking for work is 10.5%. That's roughly 6.8 million men nationwide are neither working nor looking for employment, according to CNBC. Now, that 10.5%, let's say 70 years ago, was 2.5%. And to me, that's stunning. And I don't know what it says. And it's not a leading question. Does that mean that there are too many people sort of living on like welfare, or there are people who are independently wealthy and don't have to work, or there are people that are just, I don't know, relying on spouses? I don't know what it means, right? Because maybe, you know, there's a percentage of people who are helping at home when their wives have careers, because that's a dramatic shift from 1954. Or maybe they're relying on the government to get by. That's probably a lot different than 1954 as well. There's no answer, but it is extremely troubling. I can't imagine. I have no choice.
How were they surveyed? Does it say? Or how were the numbers come from?
Well, it's for the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. Okay. I mean, they do surveys on employment all the time.
I was going to say, if it was men, we got the survey and we just threw it in a pile. Most of them probably didn't look at it anyway.
No, they actually answered, I think. But that's funny. Yeah, they probably tore it up. I love tearing up junk mail. Like, it really makes me happy to rip them in half. But it's a really, all kidding aside, it's a real troubling statistic. And there's a lot of conversations going on about the status of the contemporary American male. It's just hard. It's difficult to be, you know, I'm raising two sons and you're raising three, Joey. I mean, it's not easy to raise good men. It's Mm-mm. a hard, hard society.
There's a lot of pushback too.
Yeah. And it's, you know, like, I mean, in again, the type of mistakes obviously has a difference, but it's a little bit more, it's just difficult to toe the line and for growth with young men, and it's not just in my family, your family. It's a big problem across the world, but I know in this country. So that was a really interesting piece of information that didn't necessarily make me too it's a tough statistic, in my opinion, no matter what the reason is behind it. Now, I had a friend Saturday night. We had a fire pit in the backyard. I came back from visiting my parents on the Cape. And drove through the rain. It was brutal. It was like nice here, but it rained my entire drive back until I got to basically like Charlton on the Pike. And then a couple of friends came over and dropped by because they had spent the whole day at the Big E on Saturday. And they said it was nuts. And then the statistics bear itself out. You know, we talk about when we talked about the Big E, about the best times to go. It's obviously during the week and you go right when the fair opens. On Saturday, they had 178,608 people. That's an all-time single-day record. And then yesterday, they had more than 148,000. And there was a lot of videos on social media about the crowds and the traffic and everything. And again, I'm supportive of the Big E, and we love it. You know, we always promote it. But is there a point where it's too many people? Like, should they cap it? Because we heard tons of complaints about traffic and crowds, and maybe it's big enough to sustain it. But it's incredible that on the previous Monday, well, take the previous Tuesday, there were 58,000 people that went through the gates. Now, that actually was a record for a Tuesday, but it's still like a third of what they had on Saturday. So, I mean, it actually, if you think about it, unless you're going to see a concert, if everything else is the same, just go on a Tuesday. You know what I mean? Don't go on a Saturday. But I almost feel like they should have a cap on it. I feel like it is. And the other thing I want to point, we got to go, and I had a bigger thing I want to talk about, the DJT, Donald Trump's social media company, because, you know, the lockup period's over. I want to talk about that, but maybe I'll squeeze that at 8:10. There's a really nice video. Mookie Betts, the Dodgers, I don't know when they were doing it. They were playing the Reds, and somebody for the Reds hit their first home run of their career, and the fan had it in the stands. Mookie Betts got the fan to throw it back on the field to get the ball to the player so they could have it for their first home run, and then Mookie gave him one of his bats. That's how it works. What is an adult? It was an adult male, too, who caught the ball. He doesn't need the ball. It was really cool. I like to see it.